Britain sided with Hamas this week in one of the most shameful speeches from one of our prime ministers in history. We have a lot more information about a very shameful episode in US history, Barack Obama's attempt to remove his successor using a false story about Russian collusion. And it's tariff day again. We'll look at how Donald Trump already won his trade war with Europe and what will happen in the next round on today's Trumpet World. Nearly 2 years ago, Hamas launched a barbaric attack on Israel. Over 1,200 people were murdered, 250 hostages taken, children brutalized, killed in merciless fashion, women raped and attacked. And this week, the leaders of Britain and Canada chose to respond to Hamas's attack by rewarding them and giving them exactly what they want. These two countries have joined France now to be on the path to recognizing an independent Palestinian state. To tell us more about this, we'll hear from Mihailo Zekic.
Britain will recognize a Palestinian state at the start of the United Nations opening in September, according to Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer on July 29th, following, as you said, the French lead that we talked about last week. This is according to again the Prime Minister, unless if Israel gets certain number of conditions going in, which includes allowing the United Nations to control all aid going into Gaza. Israel agrees to a ceasefire, guarantees there will be no annexation of the West Bank, and commits to a two-state solution. The elephant in the room, the deafening silence, is on there are no conditions here for the Palestinians, including Hamas. No conditions even on them releasing the hostages they have still in their captivity. Right before this happened, U.S. President Donald Trump was asked if he would oppose if Britain did this, and he said in front of the cameras no, and the British government probably took that as a cue, like, okay, Washington's not going to get in our way, and you could see they pounced on that.
Well, before we move on, I mean, this is, we have to think, like, this is appalling. Mm-hmm. What they're doing, you put together what they've said, and they've said, okay, Hamas, if you keep your hostages, do not release your hostages, because then there will be no ceasefire and we'll recognize a Palestinian state. If Hamas release their hostages, well, then maybe there'd be a ceasefire, maybe they won't get recognition. So the British government is now actively encouraging Hamas to keep its hostages. Like, they are siding with the terrorists. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, he said, Starmer rewards Hamas's monstrous terrorism and punishes its victims. A jihadist state on Israel's border today will threaten Britain tomorrow. Appeasement towards jihad terrorists always fails. It will fail you too. I think he's, you know, he's exactly right in that. Brendan O'Neill, he wrote over at Spiked Online, this truly is a new low for this government. It is moral blackmail masquerading as diplomacy. It is a barely veiled threat against a supposed ally. Starmer is essentially telling Israel that unless it lays down its arms, Britain will reward its enemies. This will go down in history as one of the most scandalous betrayals of a friend in modern times. And he didn't just, you know, in his speech where he outlined this, he repeated all of the same lies that we're used to hearing now about Israel, you know, accusing Israel of trying to deliberately starve Gazan civilians, instead of Israel trying to destroy Hamas's power base by taking away control of food supplies from Hamas. Melanie Phillips said, by demonizing Israel this way, Starmer is further fueling rampant Jew hatred, which is consuming the country he leads. And I think, you know, she wrote an article. I really liked her conclusions. Her conclusion there, where she said, today's accomplices to barbarism aren't dressed in jackboots or in the shades and braids of a junta generalissimo. They wear the suit and earnest spectacles of a human rights lawyer. It is today's banality of evil, and it is frying the Western brain. I mean, that is, he is like the bespectacled German civil servant that kind of pushes papers around to murder thousands of Jews and just kind of says, well, I'm just doing my job. That's where Britain's prime minister, I mean, that's the moral low that this country has sunk to with this. The next day, the prime minister's office put out a statement basically indicating that if Hamas were really intransigent on the hostages and they were the ones impeding a ceasefire, this might not go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that wasn't a statement from the prime minister, though. It was from his office, and it did contradict what he said. So I don't know how seriously to take that. But anyway, yeah, you were going to introduce the Canadian.
Yes. So the very next day, almost as if taking cues, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney announced almost the same thing. As our managing editor, Mr. Joel Hilliker, put in his morning brief, it's not as craven and imbecilic as the British statement. Most of the conditions he put were on the Palestinian Authority on actually holding elections, which they haven't done since 2004.
Well, not on holding elections. That's the crucial thing.
We'll get to that. President Mahmoud Abbas has been having a four-year term since then. In case if you wonder how democratic he is, to basically ban Hamas from all participation in politics, to demilitarize the Palestinian state, sounds pretty good on paper. But as I'm sure you were going to say, it's basically just looking for commitments from them. And since 2004, we've been getting a lot of commitments about every year from the Palestinian Authority. They're going to do just this kind of thing. And looks like the Canadian government is happy as if they just hash out the same old memos that lead to nowhere and use that as an excuse. Now, President Trump has been a little bit stronger on Canada than he has been on the United Kingdom, which can be expected. He said on social media that this is going to figure into trade talks with the countries. And Canada today just got slapped with a 35% tariff, probably one of the harshest that he's been putting on lately at different countries. Probably.
Well, everyone else gets their tariff on August 7th. Yes. Canada gets theirs today.
Yes. So I'm looking forward to that when I move over back there in a couple of months. But I'm sure this was part of the calculus of the Canadian government, and they still went ahead with it. We talked before again last week about Emmanuel Macron. It looks like he was the straw that broke the camel's back, and now most major countries... France was the first G7 country to announce this ever, and now we have two other ones jumping on the bandwagon, and it looks like now that American opposition is not as strong as it was before, you're basically seeing the entire free world show their true colors and show what they really think of organizations, even as you would think as unapologetically evil, and there's no possible way you could agree with them as Hamas.
So this... I mean, it exposes the moral bankruptcy of the Western world. You have everything that, especially the left, doesn't like, gets called Hitler. Yet now we're seeing that if we were living in the 1930s again, our mainstream leaders that think they're so superior and sophisticated would not just be appeasing Adolf Hitler, but actively supporting him. I mean, that's what you see from what they're doing with Hamas now. It exposes the absolute moral bankruptcy. It exposes the evil of those that lead us, their lack of courage, their lack of will, their cravenness. That is prophesied, the complete absence of leadership that we would see in the Western world. It's a result of the way we're living. It's the result of family breakdown and things like this. We no longer raise a cadre of young, strong men that can grow up, become experienced statesmen, that can lead a country well. That's not there anymore. So that's a reflection of a general trend. You, I think, have some specific prophecies as well on this break.
Yeah, so before we get into that, I'd like to put in the caveat I was mentioning or hinting at earlier. Both Britain and Canada are run by center-left governments. Both countries have a very strong Muslim population that they rely on as their voter blocks. And a lot of those constituents have been pressuring their governments to do more. Like, this genocide happening in Gaza, why aren't you doing more, etc., etc. Donald Trump was why they hadn't been doing more. And now, once that big obstacle isn't as big of an obstacle anymore, they're going full steam ahead. And especially in Britain's case, the government is very unpopular with a rising number of people, and you could see them trying to pander into their base a bit more. And that ties in with some of the prophecies I wanted to talk about. We mentioned how Britain, Canada, the United States, they have a special connection with the state of Israel that goes back to biblical times. In fact, they're even brothers, all descending from the ancient tribes of Israel. The state of Israel, or Judah, is just one tribe. You can look at Genesis 12, and God prophesies to the patriarch Abraham that he would have a great nation. that he would bless him physically with, but also that through him all the families of the earth would be blessed, that Jesus Christ would come from his progeny, and that came from the tribe of Judah. These countries are linked together through national heritage, but also through the involvement of God. And God also said that if his people would disobey him, that there would be huge curses coming on them as well. And one of those curses is division between them. Isaiah 9 verses 20 to 21 reads, "They will eat every man the flesh of his own arm, Manasseh, Ephraim, and Ephraim, Manasseh, and they together will be against Judah. For all this his anger is not turned away, but his hand God's is stretched out still, Manasseh being America, Ephraim being the British Commonwealth countries." Zechariah 11:14, another example, God says, "Then I cut asunder my other staff, even bands, that I might break the brotherhood between Judah and Israel." This is what Mr. Gerald Fleury, our editor-in-chief, wrote in his booklet on Zechariah, quote, "A survey taken in the Arab world said that the number one reason the people hate America is because it supports Israel. Our will is deteriorating rapidly. Is it possible that Americans will begin to think, why are we making ourselves such a target over that little country? This could be a prophecy of a rift between these two countries, one that would leave Judah very alone." Mr. Fleury was referencing America there, but Ephraim is still part of Israel. The prophecies still apply to them. And in this case, you could literally see not just pandering to Arab countries, not just pandering to oil supplies, but even Muslim populations in their own borders at the expense of Judah. Actions that have very real-world consequences in a major war that's being fought right now. Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, something we recommend here often, it ties in all of that with what's happening in America, with what's happening in Britain, in Canada, and how it ties in with biblical Israel and what God is doing through those nations. And if our viewers haven't ordered that yet, I highly recommend that they go and order that book. It's free on our website, no cost or obligation, and it is a really good resource to start understanding a lot of these events.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for that. That's a book we offer very much on this show because it is the foundation to understanding world news. I'll also mention the previous Trumpet print edition, Israel's Rising Lion. I mean, this is a story that I find quite upsetting to see Britain do something so shameful. That though is a much more positive story. Looking at the positive example of Benjamin Netanyahu and the way that he has confronted evil and just some of the incredible success that he has had in doing that. When you look at what has happened, the way that they took down Iran or at least delayed a lot of their nuclear program. So you see somebody who is not being craven. And there are important lessons, really, that Britain and America need to learn, but even individually that we can apply from that. That's in our latest Trumpet print edition. You can get that on our website, thetrumpet.com. You can sign up for a free subscription and you'll get it in the post every month or 10 times a year for you to look over. And again, there's exactly as you said, no cost, no obligation. There's nothing you have to do. There's no follow-up beyond just us checking you still want to keep receiving this magazine. And we'd be very happy to send that out to you. But I think you had a few other stories from the Middle East to bring us to.
Well, actually, both from Europe, but both involving the same general trend we've been talking about. Slovenia just announced it'll put a full arms embargo on Israel. It's the first EU country to do that. I'm not really aware that Slovenia is a major arms exporter. Israel is, and a lot of these companies or countries jabbing at Israel rely a lot on Israeli defense systems. So we'll see how that turns out. This story is just completely ludicrous. Next one. Belgium has referred the criminal conviction of two IDF soldiers captured in Belgium to the International Criminal Court for war crimes. This happened a while back. Two soldiers in the IDF went to Belgium to go to a music festival, where we heard that before, a concert, and Belgium arrested them, saying that they're guilty of war crimes. They were later released, and looks like those soldiers made it back to Israel. Belgium is investigating that because they weren't supposed to leave the country, but now they're being sent to the International Criminal Court. I mean, this is not Benjamin Netanyahu, as ludicrous as that would be. These are two soldiers that could have been anybody in the IDF.
Well, could have been almost anybody in Israel,
yes.
Given that Israel has conscription.
Yes.
I mean, this is basically making being an Israeli citizen illegal.
Yes, this is basically declaring if you're an Israeli citizen, you are a Nazi. And not only are you a Nazi, we're going to use every international tool we have available to hunt you down in whatever country you are in. I mentioned to you before the show started, I visited Belgium very briefly last year, and I was genuinely surprised with how much anti-Israel graffiti and signage and whatnot was just displayed walking for a few hours in Brussels. And I visit European cities quite often. London's no philo-Semitic paradise, but even seeing Brussels compared to that was a bit of a shock to me.
Thank you very much for that, Mihailo. Yesterday, the Durham Annex, a classified section or addition to the Durham report into the Russia collusion hoax, was published. This annex gives us yet more details about the Russia collusion scandal and shows us how Barack Obama's fingerprints were on this right from the start. To get more on this story, we'll go to our US correspondent, Andrew Miller.
Yeah, this Durham annex, it's actually part of the Durham report, which is a few years old now, but most of it was redacted until recently. So now finally giving a public like a viewpoint into the beginning parts of the Russia collusion scandal. And most of what's in this Durham annex actually happens almost a year before what happened during Tulsi Gabbard's previously declassified document batch. So last week on this program, we were talking about Tulsi Gabbard's report, focusing mainly on how Barack Obama had received intelligence from the U.S. intelligence community, that there was no evidence that Donald Trump had colluded with Russia, and he didn't like that assessment. So on December 9th, 2016, he ordered his top intelligence chiefs in the CIA and the FBI to come up with a new report that did conclude that Donald Trump had colluded with Russia. And we talked, actually, if you watch that program, quite a bit about how that new report he ordered was based largely on this document put together by the Hillary Clinton campaign called the Steele dossier. We'd actually received some more information this week about just how vocal some of Obama's intelligence chiefs were about not using the Steele dossier, saying that it was unreliable, that it was unverified, it's basically gossip, it's reads like the National Enquirer, which is a Enquirer, which is like a supermarket tabloid. And John Brennan, James Comey, and Barack Obama used that dossier anyway. So this new Durham annex is actually giving us more information about the Steele dossier and how it came to be. We're getting emails, actually most of the emails declassified are between a woman named Julia Smith, who worked for the Clinton campaign, and another person, Leonard Bernardo, who worked for George Soros's Open Society Foundation. So that's one of the new things about this report, is basically just how involved the Open Society Foundation was with this dossier. That's really an angle I hadn't heard much about before. Both the Open Society Foundation and the Democratic National Convention were hacked by hackers in Russia. We don't know if it was the Russian government. That's an assumption the media's kind of made and ran with. Could well be, but the Cozy Bear and the Fancy Bear hacking networks in Russia did hack the Democratic National Convention and the Open Society Foundation. And so these emails between Mr. Bernardo, who's still actually one of the directors at the Open Society Foundation, and the Clinton campaign, they're basically talking about how, if you remember back in 2016, there was a lot of concern about the Hillary Clinton email scandal. She'd been using a private email server to send emails when she was Secretary of State. So we don't have her emails on the public server. And so we're like, well, who is she talking to? And what type of deals is she making? There was concern over the Uranium One scandal, where she signed off on a plan for the Russians to purchase a company that controlled much of the uranium in Wyoming. And so what these emails tell us is that the Open Society Foundation and the Clinton campaign were concerned about the negative publicity of the email scandal and had concocted a plan to distract from that by releasing information that it wasn't actually Hillary Clinton's emails with the Russians you needed to be worried about. It was Donald Trump's collusion with the Russians that you needed to be worried about. And so these emails we're getting here were basically saying that the this Juliana lady from the Clinton campaign, she's the one who thought up this plan to smear Donald Trump. And she's informing Leonard Bernardo at the Open Society Foundation that Hillary Clinton had personally signed off on the plan. And they thought they could count on Barack Obama's FBI to pour oil on the fire or make this scandal seem more legitimate because Barack Obama had personally greenlit or given his permission to do what they needed to do to distract from the Hillary Clinton email scandal so that didn't hurt her chances in the election.
Probably also just worth clarifying at this point as well, like these emails that we're getting are from an anonymous source, presumably within the Russian government or the Russian intelligence, that are passing on the Russian hack back to the FBI. So it is possible that it is theoretically possible that Russia is making this up because we're getting these emails via Russia. How, and a lot of people involved say, no, I didn't write that email, etc. However, that is very unlikely because you look at the language in this email and Julia's writing to this Leonardo guy and basically saying, well, here are some Hillary Clinton talking points. And he's kind of like, great, well, I'll pass it on to people like the Carnegie Foundation and some of these other organizations. And then we do have material from them that use almost identical wording from these emails. So that's a very strong indication that these are genuine, but it is worth acknowledging that we are kind of getting them via Russia, and that I think was the FBI's excuse for sitting on them and not really doing anything about it.
They interviewed both Hillary Clinton and Leonard Bernardo, who obviously claimed that, like, oh, I've never seen that email before in my life. This is just part of the Russia collusion scandal, which is not a telling statement because, like, yes, it could be possible Russia made it up. It's also like if what Russia is saying is true, that is exactly what you'd say to dismiss yourself from it. So that is a good point, probably why they've kept this classified for so long, because... I mean, because I guess, like, setting this aside, and if you set this Durham annex aside, we still have domestic documents in the United States showing that Barack Obama launched the Crossfire Hurricane investigation into Donald Trump in July, and that by December, his own intelligence agencies said they had no proof of any Russian attempts to influence the election. And Obama decided that's not good enough, release another intelligence assessment, relied on the Steele dossier. So that's probably why Tulsi Gabbard released that batch first, is basically all the stuff the Obama administration was doing in December of 2016. Is fully sourced on domestic documents, not reliant on these leaks. This Durham Annex is actually looking back almost a year before then, saying that, well, what was going on in January, February, and March of 2016? But it definitely puts kind of like the story into the bigger context of just the amount of like political partisanship that was involved from the very beginning. It's not like a an official nonpartisan FBI investigation into Donald Trump's collusion with the Russia. This is going back to a time after the DNC was hacked, where there was like finger pointing both ways that you're the one colluding with the Russians.
I mean, it's really this idea that it's December, it's a month or so after the election, and suddenly Barack Obama is shocked to be confronted with credible intelligence that shows that Donald Trump had links with Russians and maybe Russia stole the election. And oh no, he's got to kind of scramble and figure out what to do about this and come up with a nonpartisan way of dealing with this crisis. I mean, that's the narrative from Barack Obama and James Comey and all these others. That has been so thoroughly exploded by now. And you know, what this does is it even goes, it wasn't just that, okay, Donald Trump won the election and then the Obama people used this dossier that Hillary Clinton had put together again. Like, they were actually involved long before that. They were right there involved with the creation of the dossier. And it stems from, it talks about Barack Obama having Loretta Lynch get involved with the FBI's investigation, to lean on the FBI to make sure they don't look too hard into Hillary Clinton. The memos say that Loretta Lynch was then briefing the head of the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, on exactly how the FBI investigation was going. And so it grows out of, and it says that the root cause of all of this was Obama didn't want his legacy stained by Hillary Clinton's kind of pay-for-play allegations and giving preferential treatment to donors to the Clinton Foundation within the State Department and that kind of thing. It all comes right out of Barack Obama kind of trying to tilt the election in Hillary Clinton's favor from, you know, not just December 2016, like you were saying, but like January 2016. So we really have more and more roads leading to Barack Obama. And I think what has surprised me a bit with this story, the first stories that we got caused a lot of a splash. This one I haven't seen all that much on in the news media. It's kind of like we've moved on now. Okay, we've kind of acknowledged that the narrative, the original narrative, the Obama narrative is false, but we've moved on and we're not really going back and looking into this. But this was an attempt to unseat an elected president. Like, this was an attempt to overthrow American democracy. That needs, yeah, that needs the kind of the treason investigations that Donald Trump and Pam Bondi have been talking about. And it needs some outrage, I think, from the American people to have things change and have this never happen again.
Right. That is definitely the reason why it's important not to just move on from this story, because well, even like as we pointed out last week in our editor-in-chief, Mr. Gerald Fleury's article, Saving America from the Radical Left Temporarily, making the explosive claim, which is seeming just more and more proven every day, that if Hillary Clinton would have won the 2016 election, like, America's constitutional republic would be over. And so this isn't just a matter of, like, in politics, unfortunately, people dig up dirt on their opponent, much of it false, and do mudslinging back and forth all the time. But in this scandal, as one of those emails said, relying on the FBI to pour oil on the fire, this isn't just one candidate making false accusations against another one. You actually got the Federal Bureau investigation involved in basically a criminal plot to frame Donald Trump for something he didn't do. Some of this stuff goes back before Trump was even the nominee. And so you've got the FBI not only trying to influence the election process in America, but actually trying to influence, like, the Republican primary process. Some of the stuff back in January, February, April, March time period, like, some of this information is, like, wasn't even designed to keep Trump out of the White House, but designed from ever becoming the Republican nominee in the first place. And so when you've got political, like official government agencies trying to influence even the nominee process, this does start to sound something more like the, in a more subversive way, it's like the Guardian Council in Iran, to where like all the candidates have to be vetted before the people even have a chance to vote for them. You could get in a position where the American people, they almost live in the facade like they're in a democracy, because they still go to the polls and they still vote. But the people they're voting for have been so thoroughly screened by the deep state that you're not even allowed to vote for someone who's not part of the political establishment. And so that's kind of the big picture on this, like where when you read Mr. Fleury's book, America Under Attack, he's quoting verses in 2 Kings 14 about the name of Israel being blotted out from under heaven, which is really, you're talking about like this form of government that is common in Israel. Melanie Phillips, who's been on the program several times, she has some good books. One of the more recent ones, Builder's Stone, that really break down some of these constitutional principles that go all the way back to not just the founding fathers, but to King David and to ancient Israel, just totally being blotted out, and you're and the American people being subjected to, like I said, a tyrannical form of government that's been much more common throughout Gentile nations throughout world history. And so now that Trump's back in office, like it was like Tulsi Gabbard, to her credit, she's not letting this scandal go. She's keeps releasing documents, even if people don't pay much attention to them, because the American people, they do need to see how close we came to being a police state run by the FBI and the CIA.
And you mentioned America Under Attack. I mean, here's just another quote, a powerful point Mr. Fleury makes there. He says, "This is not merely a problem of one man at the top with a lawless spirit. He would have never achieved the heights of power if not for a massive crisis of lawbreaking throughout the nation. Our people are saturated in sin of every imaginable type and proud of it. There are consequences for such lawlessness. This is a clear principle spelled out in the Bible from beginning to end. This is why God is punishing us with such a devastating curse." And we need to see what nearly happened, the depths that America reached here with this scandal, well, to help be motivated to look into and repent of those sins and to turn and to change. And you can read more about that. You can read more about all of those prophecies that Andrew mentioned in that book, America Under Attack. It's just such a pivotal book for understanding the spiritual dimension of what is happening in the world today. And there's a lot there that applies even beyond the United States. A critical book for understanding world events. Well, I think you had some other stories to bring us, including an incredible turnaround. I read an Axios report, I think, on this next story you were going to talk about, and they were just completely scratching their heads. They couldn't figure out why this this major turning point had happened. But yeah, maybe you can bring us your other stories.
Yeah, well, this first story, it definitely factors into that 2 Kings 14 prophecy about God saving Israel by the hand of an end-time Jeroboam, because during the Biden administration, I mean, there's about 10 million people who crossed the border into the United States. I was actually reading a book by a former U.S. Border Patrol agent who we hope to interview on Trumpet World at some point in the near future, who was breaking down the statistics that there's actually like 22 million illegal immigrants in the United States right now. And almost half of them were let in under the Biden administration. And the media keep telling us that this was like an unsolvable crisis. And Trump keeps saying that, like, if we just were did a few tweaks to the border where we send some more Border Patrol agents down in there, change some laws to where you have to remain in Mexico before you come to the United States, that he could fix this. And it looks like he was absolutely right, because they said last month 10 people were caught crossing the Darien Gap into Central America. Now, the Darien Gap, that's a section of jungle on the Isthmus of Panama that connects South America and North America. So anyone coming from South America to the North America has to go through this gap. Under the Biden administration, there were times where I think in August of 2023, you had 82,000 migrants pouring across that gap. And so since Trump's been in office, it's gone from 82,000 a month to 10 a month. So he's pretty much just completely dried up the spigot of illegal immigrants into America. So that's some pretty good news that shows that, like, if you're looking at saving Israel from all the crimes that came with that border crisis. Now, some of the bad news related to it is, obviously, when the Biden administration was in charge and there was no oversight over the border and tens of millions of people were pouring across, the Biden administration, when they apprehended children crossing the border, and there were hundreds of thousands of them, they were actually using taxpayer dollars to relocate them to either foster homes or with relatives across the nation. They've now been looking into, like, how they're doing, and finding out that there were, let me get the exact statistic here, says that there were some 230,000 unaccompanied minors were released from immigration custody into the United States. And they basically say that at least 31,000 children were actually sent to invalid home addresses. So they've had some investigative journalists go check up on them. They go to the address and it's an abandoned house. And so it's pretty well known that the sex trafficking industry is the biggest criminal enterprise in the United States. I think we're looking at having an infographic on it in the next Trumpet, actually. And showing that, like, if you look at the people who are involved in that industry, they're saying, so these days, especially like in the Texas area, like 90% of children sex trafficked in like Houston or Dallas are migrant children. So there's a lot of focus on like Jeffrey Epstein and some other sex traffickers in America, as there should be. Like what these people did were horrible, and his client list needs to be held to account. But the volumes of sex trafficking Epstein was doing is minuscule compared to what the drug cartels do on a monthly basis. And so these new reports actually coming out of the House Oversight Committee actually look that the United States government, maybe willingly, maybe unwillingly, I mean, that you can't necessarily approve intent, but it looks like it is actually complicit in doing some of the cartels' work for them, to where the cartels just brought at least 31,000 children to America for the U.S. government to deliver to an abandoned house where they just disappeared into the country. Really horrible story that showing just a lot of the evils that came from that open border crisis, where you're letting 10 million people into the country. You can't keep track of all of them. You're releasing over 200,000 unaccompanied children. You're just sending them to whatever house they claim to have a relative at. And it looks like at least 31,000 of them have just completely disappeared into some sort of black market industry here in the United States.
Thank you for that, Andrew. Well, it's tariff day again. The deadline for agreeing new trade deals with the United States has now passed, with a flurry of different deals announced in the run-up to that deadline. Today, those that didn't agree a deal are waking up to find out exactly how much pain they're going to suffer. The toughest treatment has been reserved for Canada. A 35% general tariff goes into force today. Other nations are going to get their tariffs going into force August 7th, leaving a little more time for deal making. It's just Canada that gets that instant treatment. Even Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney promised to continue to negotiate for a deal. President Trump also demanded that drug makers lower their price for Americans, and this caused general share price drops and economic trouble in countries with the large pharmaceutical industries. But we're starting to see these tariffs come into force. And I think one of the most significant places we saw this and most significant deals we saw this week comes from the EU, where over the weekend they agreed or were forced to agree a new trade deal with the United States. French Prime Minister François Bayrou called it a dark day for Europe. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban complained that they'd been eaten for breakfast. German Chancellor Friedrich Schulz said that the deal would substantially damage German finances. The Financial Times said that one ambassador told them that there's no hiding that the EU was rolled over by the Trump juggernaut. Trump worked out exactly where our pain threshold is, that ambassador said. And the EU avoided a full-on confrontation with the United States and tariffs going into force today by signing a deal. But there's no doubt who won that negotiation. America is going to impose a 15% tariff on most EU goods. That's down from the threatened 30%. To do that, the EU promised that its businesses will invest $600 billion in America by 2028 and that they would spend $750 billion on U.S. energy over the same time period. And to rub salt into this wound, this deal was worse than the one that Britain got with Donald Trump. And when Britain signed its deal with Donald Trump, they were mocked across the EU. You know, you went it alone, you Brexit, you left the European Union. Now you had to sign a terrible deal with Donald Trump. If you'd have stuck with us in this big trade bloc, well, you could be part of the much bigger, better deal that we're going to get from President Trump. And that completely did not happen. Matthew Lynn wrote in The Telegraph, no matter how much the Euro fanatics try to spin it, in reality, Donald Trump, as he might put it himself, has knocked this one out of the park. He concluded that short of having to ship the Mona Lisa to Mar-a-Lago, it's hard to see how it could have worked out better for President Trump. After 2 decades of relative economic decline and with crushing taxes and regulations suffocating the life out of its industry, the EU is now too weak to stand against the US. Its fragility has been painfully exposed, and this deal will only make it worse. And the academics across Europe are saying similar things. Alberto Alemano, he's a professor of European Union law in Paris. He said that the deal reflected Europe's economic and ideological surrender. Jacob Reynolds of the think tank MMC Brussels said it was nothing short of total capitulation. But the EU is not just going to take this humiliation and move on. This is not the first time that the EU has been defeated in a war, or that Europe, a European power, has been defeated in a war, but then come back and try again. This loss is going to prompt some major changes. Europe has taken some important lessons from this. Alemano wrote that this failure exposes the fundamental weakness of European governance. Lacking a true EU-wide governance system, the bloc remains incapable of translating competing national agendas into a unified position. And with all their different competing national interests, they couldn't come up with a way to fight back, because retaliating against America would have hurt Europe too. I mean, that's how that trade retaliation works. And in doing that, some European countries would suffer more than others. You know, Donald Trump was also playing kind of divide and rule. He threatened, say, French wine or cars that affects more Germany. And with this retaliation falling unevenly, with uneven levels of pain, Europe couldn't agree. Those nations that would be hit the hardest would kind of be like, well, no, we've got to come up with a deal that doesn't hurt us as much and maybe hurts this other nation more. And they couldn't agree. They were hamstrung by that
division. They were also hamstrung by the fact that Europe relies on America for military protection. If America threatened to withdraw from its military bases in Europe or threatened to withdraw its nuclear umbrella, the EU knew that they would have to back down at that point. And the EU has what's called its anti-coercion instrument. It's often referred to in the press as the EU's nuclear option. But you can't go nuclear on the country that provides your nuclear umbrella. Like, they couldn't do that. Clemens Foust, the president of the think tank, the IFO Institute, he posted on Twitter, "The trade deal is a humiliation for the EU, but it reflects the imbalance of power. The Europeans need to wake up, focus more on economic strength, and reduce their military and technological dependence on the US. Then they can negotiate." The Financial Times reported Europe's dependency on America's security guarantee was further argument against trade confrontation, especially for the bloc's eastern and northern members. Fears that Trump would cut off weapon supplies to Ukraine, pull troops out of Europe, or even quit NATO overshadowed the talks, diplomats said. So Europe knows why they lost the war, and they know what they need to change before the next round. They need to have a stronger unified government. They need to have a stronger military. They're working on these things. And the trade deal, the way that it's structured, I mean, it almost guarantees another round. And it's not clear. America, Europe kind of got this deal. They got the trade deal down from 30% tariffs to 15% tariffs by making these massive promises of investment and spending in the US. And it's not really clear how they're going to fulfill them. Like, the EU promises that their companies are going to invest $600 billion in America. But, like, how? I mean, I often mock Europe for being socialist. And it's kind of true. But the European Commission is not the Chinese Communist Party. Like, they don't control European businesses. They can't turn to VW or Spotify or Aldi and say, you have to spend $50 billion, this company. You need to build a factory here. Like, I mean, they can ask, they can incentivize. They don't have the ability to make that follow through. And then even with the $750 billion in energy, like, you start to look at graphs and how much energy Europe gets. That is an absurd number. There is no way that they're going to import $750 billion worth of energy from America over the next 3 years. Like, 2024, the EU imported $75 billion worth of energy. I mean, you're talking about increasing that just under fourfold overnight. That's not happening. To do that, the EU would have to get two-thirds of its total energy need from the US. Even if it's completely stopped buying liquefied natural gas from Russia, from Algeria, from Qatar, from Nigeria, from Norway, and say, okay, we're just going to get all of our liquefied natural gas from America, it wouldn't make half of that $250 billion, the total energy imports. And that's even including the other energy that it gets already. And America only exported $318 billion worth of energy to the entire globe last year. And this year, well, Japan's committed to buying more energy. Other countries have as part of their trade deals. And Europe's not getting $250 billion from America this next year. They're not going to reach that $750 billion. What happens when it becomes abundantly clear that the EU isn't even close to this target? What happens if they don't follow through on that $600 billion promise? I mean, the seeds of the next trade war are already here. And watch for Europe to change so that they can fight it. This is another pressure on Europe to be more united, to potentially shrink down from 27 nations that squabble and argue to 10 that can be on the same page, have the same interest. And that's what the Bible says is going to happen. You'll have a 10-nation superpower, and they're already doing much more to take responsibility for their defense. I mean, we talked with Joshua about a week and a half ago, Joshua Michels. We sat down and discussed this new defense alliance that's emerging in Europe to replace the United States. They are working on it. They're preparing to win a future trade war. And that's exactly what the Bible warns. That's what we've talked about for decades. This is what Herbert W. Armstrong said in a sermon he gave in 1984, where I'm breaking a bit into the context, but he was talking about the blessings that Britain and America have, the prosperity that Britain and America now have.
But that blessing is not continuing because we have not obeyed God since we got it. God has given it to the United States and the British people because of Abraham's obedience and not because of our obedience. And now, because of our disobedience, all the blessings are being taken away from us. The British Empire, before World War II, said, "The sun never sets on the British Empire." They had a slogan, "Britannia rules the waves." And all trade between nations took place on the ocean. It doesn't any longer. It's all air freight now. And Britain is no longer dominant. The British Empire is gone. And the United States is going down, down, down. Because we don't obey.
We dominate trade because of blessings from God. And because God promised Abraham and his descendants control over the gates of the world that trade travels through. And that we would benefit from that. But he also promised that if Abraham's descendants, and that includes Britain and America, if we disobeyed, we'd lose that. And Mr. Flurry has continued giving the same warning. And here's a Key of David that he gave about 4 years ago, where he talks about a specific prophecy about Britain and America being attacked via trade.
If you look at Isaiah 23 and verse 13, that's the chapter that shows you really that there's a great, verse 3 says, is a mart of nations, just a super amount of traders getting together. All these Gentiles are getting together and they're going to be against Israel, the 12 nations, but specifically those three nations, America, Britain, and the Jewish nation. That is their great enemy, the way they view it. And we ought to be aware of that. Isaiah and God's prophet tells you that and shows how all of these Gentile nations are going to be besieging the nations of Israel if we don't wake up and listen to God's warning and repent of our sins, and He'll protect us if we do that. That's what your Bible tells us. And how much do we know God today? How much do we know the great God of the Bible? And all these prophecies are being fulfilled, so there's no excuse for us not believing in God. 90% of the prophecies of the Bible are being fulfilled right before your eyes. It's happening all the time. Besieging America in world trade. That is something to be very much fearful about. If you control world trade, you control the world. And that you can see happening already with China and Russia and how Russia's going after Ukraine. And there's a Seagate there that they're very much interested in. And it looks like they're going to do even more because nobody is stopping them.
Other nations are going to come along and take over world trade, take over America's position in world trade. And really, you see the way, you see a whole lot of selfishness throughout all of this. Like Donald Trump, President Trump is right that you've had Europe be protected by America, benefit from America's protection of overall trade, even manipulate their economies, their regulation, the exchange rate of the euro to take advantage of America, who is also paying to protect them. Like, that is all true. Other nations have really benefited from this. But the Bible says that because of America's sins and Britain's sins, because of our sins, these other countries, they are going to gang up. They're going to come together. They're going to wrest control of trade. And they're going to use that to besiege and bring down the United States. So watch for Europe to really get busy after this trade defeat. They lost this trade war. They're not going to lose the last trade war. They're going to keep transforming, and this gives Europe yet one more reason to transform into that coming European superstate. Well, that is about it for Trumpet World today. Jeremiah Jacques, who normally covers the Asia region, he's on holiday, and most of the news out of there anyway this week has revolved around various different trade deals, and the Bible prophesies that Asia is going to form a major part of that trade alliance as well, temporarily coming together with Europe to besiege the United States. So we'll have a bit of a thin on the ground section for that for today. I'm sure we'll have a bumper Asia section for you next week on Friday. We'll of course be back with our regular show on Wednesday as well. If you have any questions, any comments, please do get in touch with us at trumpetworld@thetrumpet.com. We mentioned the United States and Britain in Prophecy and America Under Attack. Two bumper books. I mean, in some ways, these are the top two books to understand your world today. Foundational books. And we'd be very happy to send those to you for free. You can get those on our website, thetrumpet.com. Just go to the library section. You can read them online. You can order your own free print copy. And we're very happy to send those out to you. So please do you go and order those. And the Trumpet magazine, we mentioned that as well. We're very happy to send that out 10 times a year. Any trouble you have getting a hold of that, just feel free to drop us an email, trumpetworld@thetrumpet.com. Thank you very much to Georgia Dad and Victor Granados for engineering and production. We'll be back on Wednesday. Until then, keep watching your world.